to Distanced, a podcast about people around the world who are dealing with life in quarantine during the age of the coronavirus. I'm your host, Sunil Rajaraman, and I'm recording from my home in San Mateo, California. Welcome to today's edition of Distanced. I hope you've enjoyed the first few episodes of the show. We're just getting off the ground here, and I would love any and all feedback. My Twitter handle is subes01, S-U-B-E-S-0-1, and I would just love to hear from you how things are going so far. Today's guest is Natalie Hawkins, and Natalie's a very interesting person because she has the perspective of both the Bay Area and the Midwest. So she's currently in Grand Rapids, Michigan, where she and her husband are in product design. And they lived in Palo Alto for a long time before moving to Michigan. And the experience has been sort of different than what we've had in the Bay Area. And I spent a lot of time talking with Natalie about what Grand Rapids is like compared to the Bay Area and the effect of coronavirus on local businesses specifically. So enjoy today's episode. Thank you. Hey, Natalie, how are you doing?
Hey, Sunil, I'm pretty good, thanks. All things considered, hanging in there.
So I did a little bit of an intro before we record this, but I'm here with Natalie Hawkins. And Natalie, you're in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
I am, yes.
Describe the scene there right now. So where do you live in Grand Rapids? What is Grand Rapids like? How big is it? As best you can, just provide some descriptors for the audience.
So I live in Forest Hills area of Grand Rapids. The whole metropolitan area is about 1 million people, but I think the city itself, a few hundred thousand, but then there's a lot of towns surrounding it. So yeah, about 1 million people in this metropolitan area. Forest Hills is on the eastern side of Grand Rapids. We're about a 10-minute drive, a few miles from downtown Grand Rapids, and then about a 10-minute drive from Ada, which is the closest, I guess, village east of Grand Rapids.
Describe Grand Rapids as a city. And so, you know, probably many of our audience have not been through the area. And so, like, what is it like? So, you know, like, maybe you can start with just explaining what normal life is like in Grand Rapids. Is there, you know, kind of an analog for a city that you'd say it's like, or what, you know, what it, just describe the city as best you can.
So normal life, there's a lot happening here. It's kind of gone through a resurgence in the last, I would say, 5 or 10 years. I moved to California in 2012, and I have a picture of actually of us. We left from Grand Rapids. We lived in Detroit, but then we swung through Grand Rapids to say bye to family. And I took a picture of the skyline. And then we actually, when we moved back in 2017, I took a picture of us. We live downtown. Same skyline, but so many more buildings. There's so many hospitals here. Healthcare is a huge industry. Furniture is a huge industry, mostly like office furniture. Herman Miller and Steelcase and a lot of other companies. And my husband and I both work at Amway. They manufacture a lot of like household goods that are sold through a network of business owners. So a lot of focus on manufacturing and healthcare in this area, and a lot of growth. So there's tons of new restaurants opening up all the time. It's a huge beer city, so there's tons of breweries. Basically every block has its own beer scene. So on a typical day in Grand Rapids, there's a never-ending list of things to do, places to go, lots of great outdoor areas. Michigan has all four seasons, so lots of great activity in the warmer months, but there's also a lot to do in the winter, which is great too. But right now, there's nothing happening. So,
well, I want to get to the nothing happening momentarily. Yeah. So I have this vision of this kind of typical Americana-type town, and, you know, friendly. Would you describe the city as friendly?
Extremely. Yeah, I was walking around downtown when I first moved back here, and I had AirPods in, just walking around, probably listening to a podcast, and people were just coming up to me and talking to me, and I was like, what? Who? What's going on? But then I remembered that we just moved back to the Midwest, and everybody is very friendly and wants to talk and wants to get to know you, and it's very genuine, which is nice to see. So that's the typical experience here.
So you have this, you know, this experience, and maybe you can describe your I don't want to say typical day, but you know, is it, you know, you go to work, you go, what do you do after, like on a normal day, in a normal, you know, spring day?
On a normal day, before we had kids, we would go to a brewery or a bar. We live downtown. We'd go to a brewery or a bar down the street, lots of walkable areas down there. And then with our son, we typically take a walk with our son, who's 15 months old, and our dog. We could go to a park. We could go to a restaurant, like whatever we want. We like to be outside. We have some family that lives nearby, so meeting up with them, that's like a typical day. Pretty out and about, on the go. So, always have plans.
So when did you, when did you realize, I mean, so it would have been winter months, this was going to be a problem. And so was there a moment where you said, okay, I've seen this news, this feels like this is going to affect us in Grand Rapids?
Well, it affected us actually in January, because the company we work for, my husband and I both, does a lot of business, most of our business, in China. So we actually, my husband and I were going to Mexico for our first post-child vacation without a kid. And he was actually supposed to be in China, that week, like midweek, he was supposed to leave, but we had planned this vacation before that was on the table for work. And so he said, "Hey, I'm so sorry, I can't make it. I'll just do," he actually was going to work, and he did end up working China hours, which they're, I think, like 13 hours ahead of us. So he ended up working overnight when we got back. But his trip, he didn't go, but everyone who came back from his trip back to Grand Rapids had to quarantine for 14 days because this was already happening there. And we went to Mexico January 11th through the 18th, and so that was already happening in China. We weren't fully aware of the gravity of it yet, but we knew that something was going on. It was serious enough that Amway, our employer, said, please don't come into the office. If you can, self-quarantine. So if you're around your family, maybe don't be around your family. Go somewhere where you can be by yourself for 14 days. And that got a little scary. And then I worked directly with the team in China that we were supposed to be doing a kickoff in China in February. And we were supposed to do it in person, but they had their Lunar New Year holiday, which they were all off. And when they came back, they said, actually, we're all working from home for the foreseeable future, and we probably should not do any in-person meetings, and our team in the U.S. agreed.
So in a way, you had a way advance notice. I mean, so that January, the January timeframe feels aggressive.
It was way ahead of this. And we saw firsthand that our team in China, they were telling us what was happening there. So we got a preview of what life, it's not quite as extreme as I know the restrictions that were happening in China, but they did tell us everything about, you know, we can't leave our apartment. The complex has one food delivery contact, and then someone brings it door to door. They take everyone's temperatures. There are trackers on phones. There's QR codes that you scan wherever you go. And so they were explaining all of this to us. And it was just pretty eye-opening. And we kept thinking, well, it'll hit the U.S., but we'll be able to handle it. And there's no way we'd be on lockdown. Or there's no way people would agree to lockdown.
I don't think I know, I'm familiar with Amway, but what does Amway do as a business that, you know, and describe, I mean, you know, just if you could give a quick overview.
So Amway produces manufacturing a lot of goods, anywhere from like home cleaning products to air purifiers and business tools it's sold through a network, like network marketing. And a lot of the business has been growing in recent years in Asia and primarily in China. So that's a huge focus for us right now. And yeah, so it started in Grand Rapids, started in Ada, Michigan, a family owned company still, and they're still very involved and very active. But yeah, the focus has shifted to our Eastern markets. So. So
got it. And so, wow. Yeah. I mean, you know, in a way, I mean, I think about my own experience here in the Bay Area. I started reading news stories about it, of course, in January, and it was a small thing, but you know, being that, you know, you do business with China, I mean, that time frame, did you start talking to people in Grand Rapids about this? And did you feel like, as a result of the Amway, you know, thing, that people in Grand Rapids just adapted quicker and started changing lifestyle quicker? Or was it pretty unique to your experience?
I am not exactly sure how it impacted a lot of other people, because my coworkers and I saw firsthand. I mean, we didn't see it, but we heard accounts of it, what was happening. And we had Lysol wipes and hand sanitizer in our office, like in February. And we were kind of joking about stuff, but like, oh my gosh, there she goes wiping stuff down again. Or, you know, I'd spray hand sanitizer when someone else walked in the door. And we were kind of joking about it, but we were like, but seriously, that, you know, if this disease passes as quickly and easily as we've heard, this could be a serious thing. And so my coworkers thought it was very serious, and we wanted to take action before the company officially announced the work from home. That was announced on March 12th, but we, as a my team at work, decided that we were going to start working from home that day before the company announced it. And we just said, you know, as long as it takes, we'll work from home. We have all these tools anyway. I work with teams across North America. We work with a digital agency as a partner, and then we also work with teams in China and across the world. So we're used to all these tools anyway. So we thought, you know, we can handle this. So we were ahead of it, I think. And then Grand Rapids is, as I mentioned before, it has a huge focus on healthcare. So compared to Detroit, I'm not sure, maybe there's more hospital beds per capita. I'm not exactly sure about that as a fact, but it just seemed like people were ready to take action here and stay home. And yeah. I did see some people not following the rules quite like right away, but I think in general, it's people are following the stay-at-home order.
When was the first like formal shelter-in-place order issued in your area? Like, when did you get a official notification of some sort? Do you remember roughly?
It was like the third week of March. So we worked from home. The first day of working at home as from Amway was March 13th, Friday the 13th. And then restaurants and bars were closed on St. Patrick's Day, March 17th. But social distancing was recommended that week, so like March 9th, 10th, 11th. When it was declared a pandemic, the governor, she said, you know, try to not be in large groups, have big gatherings. And then the stay-at-home order officially took effect, I think maybe it was March 24th or something around that time, like toward the end of March. And it was supposed to be through April 13th, which is just a couple days from now, but it has been extended until April 30th. And I think it'll probably be extended into May.
Got it. And so how did you personally start to change? Like, when was the moment where you just stopped going to restaurants or stopped going to fitness studios? Was that in February? Was that like, when did you make huge lifestyle changes?
The first week of March, it was my birthday, or second week of March. It's my birthday, and I did a couple, like I went to a couple salons, a couple different fitness studios. I was out and about all day, and I was like, I'm coming into a contact with a lot of people who touch a lot of things. And I started to realize that that was probably not the safest thing to do. I did not want to expose myself or expose my family. So I think March 9th, my birthday, actually, I was like, you know what? I went out and did a treat yourself day. I think that's it for a while. With no like clear end date. I just said, you know, until I know what's happening and that there's an all clear on the situation, I'm going to stop participating in more, you know, social interactive activities. But we did still go up to Northern Michigan that following weekend and saw some family, but we basically stayed inside or went out for walks, went on hikes.
That, you know, I mean, it feels like your time frame, despite having kind of the advanced heads up, I mean, it sounds like, you know, you started taking precautions, but you didn't make massive adjustments until that first week of March. Is that fair?
That's fair. Yeah. Nobody else was really, we were talking about it at work. Like, we should really maybe think about doing more working from home. And I thought, maybe I should stop going to work out so much in person. But I thought, you know, it's not as close to home yet. So I'm just going to keep my lifestyle pretty much the same, be more aware of, I'm touching door handles and, you know, don't want to touch my face, washing my hands, wiping things down. I was more aware of that, but I didn't make huge changes until that second week of March. And really the third week of March when we were full on working from home, was like the big shift.
Now, when I look at reports of Michigan and I just kind of see the media here from California, it sounds like Michigan is getting really the worst of it. And I realize that that primarily might be Detroit, at least that's from what I've read. But, you know, describe the mentality in sort of, you know, in Michigan terms, like thinking broader than Grand Rapids, like what are people feeling and seeing there on the ground?
People are terrified. They feel very weird about going and doing things. Like you have to go out and do some essential things. Like, I mean, if you can't get a grocery, the hard part is getting grocery delivery. So you sometimes, there's no windows open. So you sometimes have to go out, one person from the household go out and go to a store and get in and out as quickly as possible. If curbside pickup is not available, you have to actually go inside and wearing a mask, wearing gloves, staying away from people. They put, a lot of grocery stores have put protective glass or something between the cashier and the customer, but and there also are like self checkout areas too that are being used. But it's weird to go out and do things. Everyone's acting suspicious, afraid, sad. I did a Target pickup the other day, and I drove up. I had a mask on. You know, I opened the trunk and had her put the stuff in the trunk, and she just, her eyes looked so sad. Same with, you know, UPS delivery people. They just look, it's terrifying to know that, to not know how long this is going to last and what's going to happen next and who is going to be impacted that you know and care about. And I actually had a coworker whose grandpa died from COVID-19 last week. So
that's terrible.
Yeah, it's sad.
What's the status of cases over there? So is case count growing? Is it stable? You know, what are the latest stats within your community?
Within Grand Rapids, I think there have been about 10 deaths. I don't think hospitalizations are rising. I think that might be, I haven't checked the exact latest, but I think it might not be growing as quickly as it was before. But I have heard that we haven't really hit our peak of deaths yet. That could be a few days or even a week or so away. I do know that Detroit is exponentially worse than Grand Rapids, just higher population density. Great. It's just a bigger metropolitan area in general and geographically and population wise. So I don't know how much it's, I don't want to say that it's slowing down yet. I think more testing has become available. So the spike in cases could be related to increase in testing. Increase in hospitalizations could be related to people getting to the worst of this disease, trying to get through it at home first, but then getting to a point where they need medical assistance. So I've been trying to consume less news and trying to talk less about this to people just for my own mental sanity. But it does seem that Michigan has tried to flatten the curve to some degrees of success.
So much of this is about, like, you know, mental perception of the geo within which you live. And I have a sister in Barcelona who, you know, has been locked in her, you know, home with her family for several weeks now. But the perception is very, very, you know, bad there, obviously. And the numbers coming out of Spain and Western Europe in general are not good. I'm curious, as someone who's lived in Palo Alto before you came from California, is your perception right now, as you read the news, is your perception that you would be safer in California than you would be in Michigan? Like, what does your mind say?
It depends on where in California. I know the cases were super high in Santa Clara County a few weeks ago, which is where I used to live. So at that time, I didn't think it would be safer there necessarily. Also, there's more space. We have a house in the neighborhood, and we're not in an apartment with roommates, which is our life was like in California. So if I were to be us, go back in time about 3 years ago when we lived in California with another couple, I don't think I would feel safer there, given the circumstances. There's less you can control when you're in a rental unit. The population density is higher. You don't have as much space. You don't have your own space. Right now, it's just my husband, my son, myself in our house, and we go for a walk every day, and we order groceries or go out once every other week, but we pretty much don't leave. So I don't know if I'd have that option if I were in a more urban setting in California. If we were out in the mountains somewhere on the coast, then yeah, I'd feel great. But same as I felt when we went up to Northern Michigan briefly, and we came back because we felt like it was not fair to our parents. Both have places up there, and it felt like it wasn't fair to go up there when the local community, they needed to rely on their medical systems, and they probably couldn't take on additional people who weren't locals. So to answer your question, I feel like if I were able to be in Northern Michigan as a resident full time and didn't feel like I was taking up someone else's resources, I would feel very safe. But I do feel safe in Grand Rapids just based on our living situation now, compared to our living situation in California.
So, about COVID in general, like, do you yet know a lot of friends who have directly, you know, been impacted? Do you know people who have gotten it within your community? Of course, you mentioned your coworkers, your grandfather, but is there anyone on your street? Like, what's the closest person in terms of proximity or in terms of friendship within the Grand Rapids community that has contracted the illness?
I actually don't know personally of anybody in Grand Rapids who has it. We have found out that a couple of Amway employees, which there are several thousand in Grand Rapids, have been diagnosed with COVID-19, but are making recoveries, and we haven't heard anything else to protect, privacy. But they sent out a memo that said, if you were in close contact with these people in the last 2 weeks, we would have informed you directly. So that hasn't happened in my case. I do know another coworker's mother-in-law was hospitalized, but then has been released from the hospital. So, but me personally, like a person that I actually know and talk to, I don't know anyone who is actually sick from this.
So in terms of economic fallout, let's just kind of shift there for a second. You were describing a lively community where people are friendly and walking around, but it's converted to this place where, you're looking at each other and you're looking at the delivery person and you're at the grocery store being a little bit skeptical. What is going on with small business in Grand Rapids, and describe the small businesses that are there and who has been directly impacted to your knowledge right now?
So my brother-in-law is a chef at a local restaurant, and they're busy, packed every single night during normal times. Like, just incredible. They do incredible. Their food's so good. They're always busy. He's always busy with work. But immediately that just evaporated. They said, you can't operate. You can't have your kegs, like, for beer, and beer is a huge thing here. You got to get rid of those. You can't do anything except for takeout. So he has a staff of a variety of cooks and dishwashers and bartenders and servers and hosts, just a whole restaurant staff. He had to lay them off.
That's terrible. And how many staff? Yeah. How many staff?
I think about 20. I'm not exactly sure.
And what are they doing now? Like, in a situation like that, that's terrible. And, we hear this in the Bay Area a lot, but what do they do?
They try to give hours to people where they can. So they still need someone to come and help clean. They still need someone to take phone orders. They set up an online order system. They do some deliveries. They've tried to hire back a few people with reduced hours, but they also don't want to have a lot of people in the restaurant at the same time. So those people, I think they're eligible for unemployment through the state of Michigan, and I think also through the CARES Act. And then they probably will also be receiving some of the stimulus money that's coming their way, assuming that they're under the income threshold. So I think that they will have some relief coming their way, but if they were primarily relying on tips, servers, that instantly dried up. If they were hourly workers, that they just don't get, they're not getting paid right now.
Your brother-in-law, that's terrible for him. Is his business going to survive this essentially? Like, he's doing the takeout order thing, but is that sustainable?
In the very beginning, it was not. People were very afraid. They didn't want to get takeout. They were just at home trying to process everything. But we actually did takeout from there tonight, and my husband went to get it and said it was busy. They had a lot of orders. They were just trying to keep up. So I'm not sure, it's not replacing the income they'd usually have on a Friday night, but for now they're going to be okay. I think they haven't said anything otherwise. But I know workout studios that I go to, they rely on monthly memberships or people paying drop-in fees or buying merchandise, and none of that is happening right now. I know Orange Theory froze everyone's memberships. They laid off their staff and they are releasing online workouts, but those are all on YouTube for free. So I'm not sure from a cash flow perspective how they're doing or how long they're going to be able to sustain that, because even though Orange Theory is a large corporation all over the world, that's a local franchise owner. So
yeah, I'm an Orange Theory person too. And the San Mateo studio is closed, and who knows how long it'll be closed for, but even when we come back from this, I mean, will you think about going to the gym in the same way? I mean, I certainly will not. I mean, you know, at least for a while. I mean, this is this is a shock to the system. I mean, a massive behavior change overnight, right?
It is. And I, at first, didn't know how to handle workouts at home. It was kind of awkward trying to find a space, trying to stay motivated. It's not the same when you're not in that orange room with the rower and people all around you and that heart rate monitor on, the music pumping, and the coach. It's very different to try to do it from home. But I recently got a Peloton bike, and they have a great app. The bike is wonderful. The app, they have workouts that are not just focused on the equipment they sell. So their meditation app or classes are great. Their yoga classes, stretching, core. They even have a running program where you can put headphones in and it coaches you throughout your whole run with a great playlist. So I've found a whole new way to work out now, and I'm not sure how quickly I'll jump back into in-person workouts after all of this.
Well, so it's interesting, right? So let's go back to the economic fallout for a second. So you mentioned your brother-in-law. You mentioned that you might have this behavior change with the gym, you know, stuff. What other businesses, you know, are dramatically affected in the Grand Rapids area? You can talk about your own personal experience. I mean, if you know of any other businesses that have shut down, like, you know, what have you seen on that front?
I don't know of any that have permanently shut down. Everyone is kind of cautiously optimistic that they will reopen at some point. A lot of places that make, like, art galleries or little boutique stores have shifted to sewing masks. They're not a replacement for medical grade N95 masks, but they're great for people that want to go out and want to feel protected. They're great to put over an N95 mask to make that mask last longer. Good for delivery people or anyone who's exposed, who's not a healthcare worker who wants just a little more protection. So a lot of those businesses have been donating to medical workers, but then also selling the masks for about $5 or $7 each. So that's obviously a huge hit financially, but better than making zero. So they're trying to stay relevant. Local stores are still doing, like, they're selling their inventory online for curbside pickup or they'll ship it. And I've seen a lot, like the breweries I mentioned and the distilleries, they've converted to making hand sanitizer, especially the distilleries, because they have the capacity to do so. So I've seen a lot of that. Of course, it's not going to replace the income they used to have from people coming into their tap rooms, but if they're able to sell hand sanitizer and they're able to still sell some of their actual products for pickup only, then they will be able to stay afloat. I don't know for how long. And I'm not sure if they will ever have to permanently close or not, but I know it's going to be a huge hit to them.
One thing that we're seeing here in the Bay Area is, you know, there's of course places like, I saw one City Lights bookstore, which is, you know, an institution in San Francisco, and, you know, was definitely getting obviously massively hit. And within 24 to 48 hours on Twitter, they were able to raise a significant amount of funds to, you know, keep the lights on, essentially. And are you seeing anything like that? Is it like GoFundMes, or are there any businesses that have essentially reached out for help in the area, and are people able to support those businesses?
Yeah. So actually my brother-in-law, the restaurant he works at, he's not the owner, but he's one of the chefs, and a local who is there all the time, a regular, donated enough, I think, to pay their staff several thousand dollars. I'm not sure how much, but to bring everybody back for a week to give everyone just a paycheck. And I think that there's been some other efforts similar to that at other businesses, just to try to do what they can. If people are able to help and they don't want to see their favorite places closed, they've been trying to help as much as they can. The Barcode, which is another franchise workout studio that I go to, they froze everyone's memberships immediately when this all happened. But they said, if you're willing to unfreeze your membership, you know, we'll do all the online workouts and stuff, but if you're willing to unfreeze it just to keep us afloat, that would mean a lot. So I unfroze my membership because I would like that place to still be there when this is all over and I feel safe going back to a workout studio. So
yeah,
I mean, it's here and there.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, I on the one hand, I am like grateful for everybody, and I'm to the extent that I can supporting, you know, supporting places and things like our local Montessori school or whatever. You know, we have to keep those services alive. But you know, on the other hand, I fear that this is only going to last. You know, this can only sustain for so long.
Yeah. And as soon as, I mean, if people that are able to help right now are people that are still financially able to help, whether they had money saved or they're still getting paid or both. But I think if it gets worse economically, I think that will start to slow down. So
yeah,
I hope it doesn't.
It's hard to say what's going to happen. I think I remember from the financial crisis in 2008, it was one of those things where there was this, I mean, it was a dramatic drop and all the banks failing and Lehman. But then there was a bit of a period where it felt like, oh, okay, you know, it's going to be okay. And then it just plummeted again. And I'm talking about the public markets, but there was a temporary feeling of safety before things just hit. And what I'm fearful for is, you know, you have these many millions of people filing for unemployment every week. I think it was 6 million and then another 6 million previous week and 3 million the week before. That just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense that markets would remain stable.
They're not. I mean, if you look at any investments you might have, it's kind of a disaster right now, but I don't know how this recovers. I have a good friend who's a flight attendant and she's also a photographer, a wedding photographer. So both her income streams are not happening at all right now. And so as people continue to be hit by this, and she works for Delta, I'm not sure when they're going to be flying at normal capacity again. It could be years.
I will never take a trip for granted again. I mean, even if it's just a simple flight from SFO to LA, I mean, to visit my, my in-laws or whatever, it's just, you feel trapped essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. So she took the voluntary leave that Delta offered. She wanted to keep going to work to stay sane and help people travel, but she said it's extremely depressing to be on planes right now. So, and when she's on a layover in a city in Europe, everything's locked down. So it's not like she can even take a walk and feel like some kind of sense of normalcy. So I'm not sure when flight crew will be back to work. I'm not sure when all this will come back. But I think it's going to be a long time.
What do you miss the most right now?
I would love to go up north right now, Northern Michigan, especially during all this. It'd be great to be just in a place that's full of nature and fresh air. And we have a lot of that in Grand Rapids too, but just kind of away from things. That's the whole reason everyone in Michigan goes up there in the summer or really anytime throughout the year, is to kind of escape the daily life of Grand Rapids or Lansing or Detroit. And we are not supposed to go up there right now. Previously you were able to go if you had a house up there, but then as of I think tonight at midnight, you were supposed to make a decision on where you were going to land. And then if you decided to go up there, you had to quarantine for 14 days and not use any curbside pickup or grocery services or anything so that you were healthy before you started going out into the community. So I don't want to be part of the problem up there. So I stayed home, and knowing that we're not able to go up there for the foreseeable future is sad.
How are you holding up psychologically? Like, so, you know, what's been the most dramatic effect on you personally during this whole quarantine period? You're at home with your husband and a relatively young child. Like, what, you know, how are you from a mindset perspective?
My sister had a baby 2 weeks ago about, maybe three, I'm losing track of time, a couple weeks ago, and I'm not able to go visit my new niece or see my sister I can't see my parents. My mom is a breast cancer survivor, so she's immunocompromised. Can't see her. Can't see any family, which is hard. Especially as, you know, James is getting older every day. He's talking more and very active, very mobile, and no one's able to share that with us. I think he thinks that people just exist on screens now because he sees me working out with a screen, doing meetings with a screen, hanging out with her family through a screen. So,
yeah, it's crazy how much, you know, we have to throw the traditional rules out the windows right now. The good news is, I mean, I think he's probably young enough that he won't remember any of it.
Yeah, I'm hoping he doesn't remember any of this. That's my hope. It's been hard to try to balance being present during all of this because I'm supposed to try to focus on work, but also try to focus on taking care of him. And then also try to work, you know, have some time for myself. And I have to be very intentional about how I schedule that. So my husband knows that I need to do a workout every day and sometimes take a nap if there's time to keep my sanity. And so he's been really good about helping with all of that. But I didn't really know I needed all those things when this started. I was just trying to adapt like hour by hour to, you know, what was happening with James or what was happening with work. And I said, okay, I need to get some kind of routine, some kind of, there's no normal right now, but some kind of normal, because it's tough. So that's helped though, is having kind of a plan of attack every day. Whether it's looking at our meeting schedules and saying, hey, my morning is a little bit more late, or I have a lot of calls, but I have to listen. I'm more of a listener on these calls, so I can handle being more hands-on as a parent, but it's been hard to try to be present in any given moment because you have to be focused on so many things at the same time.
What do you think is, like, right now the most dramatic behavior change, you know, you've made in your day-to-day life? So we've talked about wipes, we've talked about sanitizer or whatever, but like, what's the most extreme thing that you've done? So you've gone from zero to one thing to 100 and something. Is there something like that has totally changed for you?
Yeah, when we get groceries, and we always wash produce before eating it, but now we soak it in the sink with soap. We wipe down all the bags from grocery delivery. We quarantine packages in the garage when they're delivered and don't touch them for a couple of days. Whenever I touch plastic that's been in a package, I know it can live on plastic for longer, so I instantly feel like I need to wash my hands. I think it's made me a lot more paranoid. And I used to be like, oh, this is great. You know, there's germs, it's fine, it'll build your immune system, kind of like a joking attitude. But now I'm like, actually, no. So I've been very just more aware of that and trying to spray down handles on doors, anything we touch on a regular basis. I'm trying to keep clean all the time, which is exhausting. And the reason you're doing it is also sad. So that's kind of been taxing.
So at the start of this interview, you painted a picture of Grand Rapids and what it was like pre-quarantine. And you've done a really good job articulating what it's sort of like now. If you had to guess and you had to articulate for the audience what you think it'll be like 6 months from now, what do you think will be permanent in terms of changes? What do you think will be kind of flex back to normal? Like, paint your vision for the city in 6 months.
What I hope will happen is that things are open back up, but people are much more aware of touching things and being clean. I know that cold, as you have young kids too, cold and flu season seems to hit hard for months because people get sick and they keep passing it back and forth. So maybe we can be a little bit more aware of, if you're sick, stay home from work if you're able to, and hopefully companies will be a little more flexible with that. I hope companies will be much more aware that working from home is a viable option. A lot of companies that have global presences here are already okay with that, but other companies were a little bit more stubborn to let people work from home. They weren't sure how it was going to happen or how it was going to be feasible, but I think now that it's happening to varying degrees of success, I hope that people are a little more understanding and accepting, not just of work or of cleanliness, but just of different circumstances and people trying to deal with things. I hope that people don't take things for granted and value, you know, what's important to them and make that a priority more than they might have done before. So I have an optimistic hope for the future. I think that things are pretty bleak right now, but I think that the long-term effects, you know, if it doesn't cause financial ruin for everybody, could be good. I think people can prioritize things a lot better. I think that people will really appreciate healthcare workers and teachers, especially parents that are home with kids that are out of school right now. I hope that they appreciate the heck out of their kids' teachers in the future. And so maybe there will be some reform in education in the future. So I have an optimistic view of Grand Rapids and just everything in general. I hope that people take this as a learning experience.
One last question. And so just digging in on the Grand Rapids stuff a little bit more, a couple of we'll call it lightning round questions. Do you think you'll be able to attend a Michigan State football game in, you know, the 2020 season?
I don't know. One, we have a new coach and not a good team, so I don't know if it's going to be worth going. That sounds bad coming from an alum, but I don't know. They canceled sports. They canceled March Madness, which is like the biggest thing ever for Michigan State fans. So maybe there'll be a football season. My friends and I had talked about a tailgate, a kind of reunion thing before all of this. And we talked about hopefully we're able to do this year. I don't know if we'll be able to, honestly. And even if it's happening, I'm not sure I would go.
Not to get super Mad Max end of the world type stuff, but do you think that travel will be restricted from Detroit to other metros?
No, I don't think so. I think Detroit is where the car was born, and that just embodies so much personal freedom to get in your own car and drive anywhere. I don't think that will happen.
Do you think every small business that you frequent will survive? And if no, what percent do you think we'll have to rebuild in the Grand Rapids area?
I don't think they will all survive. I would guess that about a quarter of them will suffer for a long time, if not close completely.
It's pretty terrifying. And you know, knowing that basically, see, I think the number is going to be higher. I think that half of these businesses are going to die. And I was talking to the first interview we did for this podcast was with someone from Shanghai, and they're weeks ahead of us. Mm-hmm. And he was saying that, you know, it's more like 60% that are going to die.
Wow.
And so that's scary. I mean, it's like, you know, pick half of the businesses that you love and they're gone. They're gone. And
yeah.
I feel awful.
I have seen some pretty incredible pivots. I'm not sure how profitable those pivots have been or are going to be in the long term, but I hope that the number is lower. I want to be optimistic that it's lower, just because I don't know. I don't want to think the worst. I don't want to have that kind of energy.
Well, and I don't want people walking away from this podcast every episode thinking that the world sucks. So your optimism is appreciated. You know, since you are such an optimistic person, leave us with one highly optimistic note about anything. Grand Rapids this year, what's the most optimistic thing you can share?
I think this is kind of a hard reset for the entire world. I think we became a very fast-paced global society, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but this has shown how quickly disease can spread, how quickly misinformation can spread, how unprepared people can be, how quickly economies can just shut down. So I hope that it's a learning experience, and I hope people can grow. A lot of things have been born during recession, so I hope that we can come out of this even stronger and more accepting as a society than we ever have been.
Natalie, we really appreciate your time, and thanks for joining us today on Distanced.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of Distance with Natalie Hawkins. Really great interview, and you know, I think that one thing that I did not expect going into it was just noticing that, you know, her community, which, you know, the Midwest is also experiencing things like just looking at other people with a different set of eyes and being a little bit wary and a little bit more cautious right now. My hope is that we can come together after this. And Natalie did indicate that as her sort of vision for the future of Grand Rapids. It is also just notable. I mean, the first few episodes, the experiences were all different than what we're seeing, you know, sort of in the Midwest, and every city is different. So as I do more of these, I'm just going to kind of take note of the fact that, look, we're almost stuck in different timelines, and we all want this to end, but we're, you know, either weeks behind or months behind, and there really is no, you know, tangible end in sight, which is what makes this thing so unique. But I am hopeful for the future, and it sounds like Natalie is too. Thanks for joining today's episode of Distanced.